one of the things that often holds people back is they don't have the courage to start because they feel like they may fail at something. So when you embrace the philosophy of Kaizen, it gives you the courage to start because you realize you're not going to get it right the first time. You're going to, you know, fall down before you learn to walk. But as long as you're making improvement, that's what matters. And that courage is extremely important because I think that's what holds a lot of people back.
Hello and welcome to the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nessel & Associates. Nessel & Associates is an ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Donald, the founder of Invert Ventures, a change strategy firm, and I'm here with my friend and colleague, Dr. Jack Nessel, the founder of Nessel & Associates, and the host of the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast. The ERP Organizational Change Journal seeks to share expertise, insight, and create effective conversation to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success, expanding what we can see so we can act in a more effective way. We seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community. The primary purpose of this podcast is to discuss, share, and reflect upon effective and efficient ways in which to realize ERP organizational change success. We will discuss the people, process, and technological components of ERP organizational change. This podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change.
Christian is best-selling author of The Smartest Person in the Room. He's a cybersecurity leader, keynote speaker, veteran, red-pilled taco aficionado, 24 times Ironman and Nightwish fan. And he's completed 300 skydives, 200 scuba dives, 5 50-mile ultramarathons, traveled to 70 countries, and he even trained on survival with the legendary Bear Grylls. This is certain to be an exciting conversation. From Illinois, but joining us today from Dublin, Ireland, Christian, welcome to the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on, Jack.
Really looking forward to this, Christian. I know myself and the NNA team really appreciated your book and your work, and we're really looking forward to sharing your insight with our listeners. So thank you so much. First, Christian, please tell us more. Introduce yourself to our listeners, if you would, but please elaborate. Who is Christian Espinosa?
Yeah, I'll give a quick overview. I grew up in California, actually, and I grew up extremely poor. I moved from Riverside, California, which is a suburb of LA, to Arkansas, to a small town of about 800 people. So it was quite the culture shock. And I grew up in a very chaotic environment. My mother was addicted to prescription pain meds, and we were on food stamps and WIC and government cheese and all that. And that kind of gave me the motivation to get out of my scenario. So I worked really hard to get out of my childhood environment. And I applied to all the military academies and got accepted to the Air Force Academy. Mm. And then from there, I was in the military for about 6 years. I was a DOD contractor. I traveled the world optimizing military networks and securing them from hackers. And after that, I did some commercial work where we did cyber attack simulations. We helped train people on how to defend their networks. I have several patents around that. Then I worked with a pretty cool gig as a white hat hacker or ethical hacker, where one of the things I did was penetration testing for commercial aircraft. So making sure a aircraft was hack proof while it was in the air and on the ground at the gate. And that was on behalf of the FAA. And then I had a defining moment when I was at that company, when I was doing the penetration testing for the aircraft, where I had sort of a run-in with the CEO and I wasn't seeing eye to eye, and it was causing me a lot of stress. So I decided to quit the job without having another job lined up. And that was the first time I'd ever done something like that. Mm. And that started me down the path of freelance work. I decided I was going to leverage my network. And while I was doing freelance work, I traveled all over the world. I climbed a couple of the 7 summits. I did the Bear Grylls Survival Academy and became an instructor with them and just did some freelance work with them. And I got kind of bored with that, though. So I started my own company in 2014, Alpine Security. It's a cybersecurity company. I had that until 2020, December. I sold it to Cerberus Sentinel. And during the journey of my own company, it was sort of like forced growth because a company is a reflection, at least I believe, of the CEO. So I really had to grow a lot. And that growth and what I ended up implementing for my company is what I ended up writing the book about.
Just fascinating story, Christian. I'm really looking forward to sharing some more with our listeners. So Christian, you share on your website that The Smartest Person in the Room, your book, provides insight as to how organizations can leverage their smartest minds to benefit themselves and the organization. You also share in your book, and I'm going to quote here for a second, why a high IQ is a lost superpower when effective communication, true intelligence, and self-confidence are not embraced, end quote. Christian, you also state that part of the goal of your book is to develop an organization's team's technical minds so they can become better humans and strong leaders who excel in every role. You then go on to say that this book provides you with an enlightening perspective on how to turn your biggest unknown weakness into your strongest defense, end quote. Christian, what inspired your book, The Smartest Person in the Room, The Root Cause and New Solution for Cybersecurity? What inspired that? Really a fantastic book.
My experience with my own company is the inspiration for the book. I had a cybersecurity company from 2014 to 2020, and I started the company without any investors. It was just me. So there was a driving need from a necessity perspective to figure things out. And one of the defining moments that caused me to write the book and really focus on fixing these issues at my company was when one of my highly technical, super smart engineers told me in a debrief that a client just didn't get it. That's the term he used. He said, just didn't get it. Mm-hmm. Meaning that the client, which is one of our clients, did not understand the severity of what we were telling them. And this was a penetration test where we broke into their environment and found a lot of vulnerabilities and discovered a lot of weaknesses. And for some reason, it struck me differently that time. And I thought, you know, I didn't start a business to have my clients not get it, especially in cybersecurity. And when I heard that, I sort of thought back over my entire career, which is almost 3 decades. And this was a consistent theme in cybersecurity and other industries where there's this idea that it's okay and accepted to talk over other people's heads, to do some intellectual bullying, to do some posturing, and basically this culture that's accepted that if I have a high IQ, it's okay if I have a low EQ or people skills or no EQ at all. And this was, from a necessity standpoint, was causing problems in my organization that I needed to fix. As I mentioned, that was just one instance that came up, but I had a couple clients leave us because basically it wasn't because of our lack of technical ability. It was because of our poor interpersonal skills. And that's when I decided to do something about it in my company. And what worked, the 7 steps, is what I wrote about in the book. And it was a lot of trial and error and quite a journey for me.
Yeah, just a fascinating book. Highly recommended.
Christian, I'm fascinated by this discussion, particularly because when I think of cybersecurity and change and leadership, there's a lot of pieces I feel like that don't get taken up. You know, people prefer the content over the way it's delivered. On your website, you say, I'm going to quote here for our listeners, there's a reason why there are only a few highly successful CIOs and CTOs in this world, in comparison to the overwhelming growing number of engineers and technicians. And it comes down to 2 words, emotional intelligence. And so combining what you said in the answer to Jack's question and to this quote, out of all the possible influences you see in the technology world, what did you say is the primary influence that leads technology leaders to be more content-driven than people-driven? And how did you both identify this in your company and seek to address it?
The primary need for them to be more content driven, from my perspective, is a need for significance. a lot of highly technical people that end up becoming a CISO or CTO are super smart. They're brilliant people. And they get their significance by being smarter than other people. If you're always trying to be smarter than other people because that's your identity, you're going to look for ways to prove that because your ego is going to try to like validate your identity. And when you're always looking to be smarter than someone because that's how you self-identify, then that doesn't make you a good leader. It doesn't make you a good team player. And it causes a lot of other issues with collaboration and coordination and doing a great job because you're trying to always be smarter than someone. And I think that is the driving factor. Most of us as humans, we want to be significant in some capacity. It just so happens in technical career fields, the significance is typically by being smarter than other people. And that manifests itself in a number of negative ways.
That was an incredible answer, I think, Christian. And I want to just capture this for our listeners. So their intelligence, which often I imagine is an incredible resource, actually, because of the way they get their significance and how they make meaning for the organization, becomes a long-term detriment, and that it challenges the way they show up for collaboration, partnership, and working together on the long term. Am I capturing that correctly?
That is a great encapsulation of what I just said. Yeah.
So, Christian, we have some questions to share specifically regarding the content of your book, of course. But first, mm-hmm. we'd like to share with our listeners some of the ideas from specific blogs. And these are ideas that were shared in your book as well. Christian, in your blog, The Secure Blog Insights to Give You an Edge in Your Workplace in Your Life, you have an article titled Awareness, Models of the World. In this article, you stated that being an effective leader requires many things. What does models of the world mean, and how can people use that idea to be better leaders?
Models of the world basically means that from each of our perspective, there's no objective reality. There's the world, but we all see the world differently. You may have heard the term, looking at something through a different lens. It's the same concept. And when we're dealing with people as a leader, it's important for us to understand this concept, because what may be important to us or may pull us in a certain direction may not work for somebody else. So it's important, if we want to have the influence over other people, which I believe is a key component to leadership, that we understand what somebody else's model of the world is. And people generally do a good job just how they communicate, letting you know if you're paying attention to what their model of the world is. And once we understand that, it'll help us communicate better with them and help us get people to follow our vision a lot easier, because I'm a believer that the meaning of communication is the response you get, for instance. And if you're not getting the right response, then it may be because you're not seeing the world from somebody else's perspective and communicating in a way where it lands with them.
Interesting. Great insight. The meaning of communication is the response you get.
So it sounds like in your answer, there's a recognition that people might see the same situation, but have very different interpretations of that. And that interpretation is how they make meaning in this world.
Yes.
So I think that's a phenomenal thing to bring up. I want to tie it to our next question, which is the value of empathic leadership for technical roles. And this is a name of an article you posted. And so I'm going to quote now for our listeners that there's a misconception that leaders, especially in technical fields, should do so only with their brains, that they should be logical and data-driven. Those skills are important, but leading from the heart is just as important. Empathetic leadership is about compassion for employees and customers, and it fits nicely in cybersecurity, an area that requires trust, communication, and collaboration for success. So, Christian, how do you define empathetic leadership, and how does it contribute and support your culture and the way you show up for your customers?
I think it's important to understand that people want to be appreciated and understood foundationally. So with empathetic leadership, if you understand that concept, then it makes it a lot easier to be empathetic, because, if you look in the mirror, we want to be appreciated and understood. And when we're dealing with people, if we're not making them feel appreciated, understood, we're not being empathetic. I mean, there's more to empathy than that. Empathy is also perspective, taking a few other things. But the appreciation and being understood are a couple of the main things. Because a lot of employees or staff or anyone you're leading on your team, the thing they may care about the most, and this goes back to the models of the world, is feeling appreciated. You know, most people leave a job not because of salary. It's because they didn't feel valued or appreciated. So with empathy, if we can focus on taking the perspective of whoever we're dealing with and understanding that we have things in common, like the human condition, and we all want to be understood and appreciated, not just ourselves, but the people we're dealing with, that helps us be a better leader. It's not just, you know, a spreadsheet. A lot of us like to try to lead from a spreadsheet, just the pure data, but we're not dealing with robots. We're dealing with people. So it's a lot different.
Exactly.
Yeah. So Christian, I want to follow up on Jonathan's question a little bit more. You know, there's a lot of great work, a lot of great research that demonstrates a common denominator between, or I should say with, effective leaders and effective transformational leaders. And that common denominator is empathy. But you shared an idea not often discussed, actually, in one of your blogs called Cognitive versus Effective Empathy Leadership. And you discuss in your book this idea of learning about empathy and applying cognitive empathy to improve leadership as well. So, you know, you did discuss that a bit in your book. But what is cognitive and effective empathy, and how do they support effective leadership?
Cognitive empathy is being able to take the perspective of someone else and not get overly emotionally involved or not feel the way the other person feels. It's more of an understanding and a comprehension. A lot of people call it perspective taking. Affective empathy is where you feel the same way the person you're being empathetic with feels. And I think empathy in leadership gets a bad reputation because a lot of us think of it from the affective empathy perspective, or one of our staff or someone that works for us feels upset about something, they're going to feel upset as well. And that's not what we're driving towards. To be an effective leader, we really want to have high cognitive empathy, you know, being able to take the perspective of someone else and understand what they're going through, but low affective empathy. If we had, you know, high affective empathy, we'd be overly dramatic and we wouldn't be able to make proper decisions. So, you know, there's a balance there, but it's really driving towards higher cognitive empathy and lower affective empathy.
Thanks, Christian. It was a really nice blog. And for our listeners, we will include that link in our show notes as well.
Interesting. You know, I often come across the difference between knowing something cognitively and knowing something effectively or affectively, and what creates a bigger impact in the person you're speaking to. One of the things we seem to have in common, Christian, is this area of transformational work and transformational strategy. And I understand it's one of your areas of success. And so this may be a bigger question than I mean it to be, so bear with me. But when it comes to leading transformation and uncertainty, and leading individuals into that, where you don't know what it's going to look like at the end from when you start, and there's high amounts of uncertainty for how someone derives their meaning, whether that's competency, achievement, recognition. What have you found are the pillars for you to show up as a leader to lead an effective transformation?
This is a very open-ended question here. Yeah. I think I cover some of the pillars in my book. I have 7 steps, and I think that lays a good foundation. You know, awareness, mindset, acknowledgement, communication, monotasking, empathy, and Kaizen. I think it's also important with what you're talking about, with uncertainty, and I talk about this in the book, in mindset, for instance, to realize that there is really no certainty. The thing that most of us gravitate towards from a human needs perspective, our significance and certainty. We want the certainty, which often equates to control, and we want the significance. And those two things will get us only so far in life. At some point, we're going to hit a glass ceiling. And the other thing that I think is important from a transformational perspective is and this is a hard concept for a lot of people to grasp, but you kind of hinted about it earlier, is that there's really no inherent meaning in anything. The only meaning with the uncertainty, for instance, or the outcome, is the meaning you attach to it. And a lot of us are conditioned to attach a negative meaning to something. So from a transformational perspective, if we have the awareness of that's what we're doing, we can take a step back, zoom out, and perhaps attach a meaning to an experience or an outcome that serves us and helps us move forward.
Yeah, I think this is a phenomenal answer. Kristen, I'm going to try and put this in another way, so see if I'm capturing it for you. It's not the situation itself that inherently has the meaning. It's the reaction we attach to it. And how can we become more conscious of the reaction that we're ascribing to the situations we find ourselves in?
Yes, Jonathan, that's 100% correct. The reaction, we have control over that, and we might as well react in a way that serves us versus holds us back. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks, Christian, for that answer. That's a very powerful response to Jonathan's question. Next, Christian, what we'd like to do is the next few questions are really more specific to your book, The Smartest Person in the Room, The Root Cause and New Solution for Cybersecurity. And in your book, you mentioned another interesting idea, Christian, that I'd like to share. I'd like to have you share with our listeners, if you would, please. And that is neuro-linguistic programming, or NLP. And NLP, for our listeners, is a behavioral technology, or really a set of guiding principles. And Wikipedia actually states that, quote, neuro-linguistic programming is a pseudoscientific approach to communication, personal development, and psychotherapy. So, Christian, from your site as well, you actually stated that, quote, identify bad habits or malware and break them using NLP to reprogram your mind, end quote. Can you explain more?
NLP, like you said, is neuro-linguistic programming. And one of the concepts that I talk about in my book, in the awareness chapter, is this idea that our brains are not hardwired, that our habits are formed over time. And what happens in our brain is there's a strong neural pathway. So once we have a habit that's formed, and this could be a bad habit, there's a strong neural pathway. So when we hear a trigger or see a trigger or something triggers us, we automatically, by default, start running that program in our brain that's the strongest neural pathway, because we've worked that thing so much that it's the default program. And often that program is not serving us. And from an awareness perspective, we just think that's just who I am. That's just how I am. And we run these programs on autopilot most of the time without the awareness. So yeah. What I talk about is being able to identify those triggers that start the program. The program you're running, if somebody asks you a question, you automatically get defensive and get, you know, upset and angry, for instance. If that's the program you run when people ask you questions, that's probably holding you back in life. So having the awareness of that and to be able to hit like a control C or stop it and install or run a new program, which will start out as a weak neural pathway, and it's just like a muscle in your arm. The more you exercise it, the stronger it will become, and that will become the default behavior. But it takes, you know, it's simple, but it's not easy. It takes a lot of effort.
That's an incredible way to think about behaviors and how you react. I like that control C. Well, thank you for that, Christian. I know that idea, NLP, is probably something that most people aren't familiar with. But, you know, using that idea and using it in a way to be more conscious and aware of how your mind operates, using it to reprogram your mind, I think is a pretty powerful idea.
Yeah, on definitely. The topic of reprogramming or being with our mind, you have a line in the book that I'm going to quote for our listeners about embrace uncertainty and new challenges by adopting a growth mindset. And I often hear people talk about growth mindsets, and it's one of those words in the leadership space where I think it can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people at the same time. So, Christian, how would you define within your context of your experience in cybersecurity a growth mindset? How does it look in that function?
I define a growth mindset as the belief that we can rewire our brains effectively. Our brains are not hardwired, kind of like the previous discussion about the strong neural pathway. We can change those. A lot of people think, like in cybersecurity, that they'll tell themselves, you know, I'm just not good with people, or I'm an introvert. The more you tell yourself that, the more you strengthen that way to support your belief. And part of belief is lie. It's a word in the middle of belief. And if we change our beliefs all the time, we just don't realize. But the growth mindset, it's realizing that we can rewire our brains, that there's neuroplasticity in our brains. And I talk about this concept, which is important to start off, going from uninformed optimism to informed realism. So a lot of us with a fixed mindset go through our day expecting a different result. That's the uninformed optimism. When we adopt the growth mindset, we are able to develop some informed realism and realize how we really are and what we need to change and develop a strategy to change that to get to where we want to go, rather than, you know, optimistically expecting a different result and doing the same thing every day.
To see things as they really are.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So, Christian, you have many insightful and highly relevant influences in your book for not only leadership development, but also personal development. But Jonathan and I have two specific influences that we would like you to share more, please. And one is, and again, I'm quoting your book, improve leadership and influence through self-acknowledgement and acknowledgement of others, end quote. Christian, do you think that self-knowledge is one of the biggest obstacles in personal growth? That is, who really likes to evaluate themselves, right? It's not often an easy task, or at least not something that people often do honestly, and especially if they're leaders that have already had any sort of leadership success. What's your thoughts on that?
I think self-acknowledgement is extremely important to leadership as well as personal growth. I think those two are tied together. Mm-hmm. With me, one of the things I realized through my own entrepreneur journey is I had trouble acknowledging myself. Like I would finish, you know, an Ironman triathlon and never take a moment just to say, you know, that's pretty cool. I trained, I did that, and I accomplished it. I would immediately look on to the next thing and say, yeah, that wasn't that big a deal. I'm on to the next thing. What I realized is if I had trouble acknowledging myself for something fairly challenging, then I'm not, as a leader, going to be able to acknowledge my staff or anyone that is in my circle of influence. So I needed to improve that. And I think the second part of your question, evaluating ourselves, you know, we need to evaluate ourselves, but we also need to give ourselves credit. And that goes back to what I referred to earlier, the uninformed optimism. You know, it's difficult to have that informed realism and realize this is where I am and these are the things that need to change. And it's difficult only, like we talked about before, if you assign the wrong meaning to it, which is often a meaning like I'm not good enough. But if you realize this is where I am and this is what I need to prove, and you make the small steps and acknowledge yourself for that, you'll become a better leader rather than just think, you know, I've reached my pinnacle and I don't have any room for improvement.
Great insight.
Kristen, you mentioned this before, and I'm going to point this out again. This is where being aware of what I would call, I believe you use these words as well, your ego story when you're looking at that situation is really important, and to be conscious of that story. So if you're not, for example, if you're not able to give yourself credit, how are you able as a leader to show up and provide credit for your team who find a deep sense of meaning there? I think that's a fantastic inquiry for leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing you bring up in your book, and it's not often heard in the leadership world, I see it much more in the data and IT and manufacturing world, is the Japanese term of Kaizen. And for our listeners, a little summary from Investopedia. Kaizen is a Japanese term meaning change for the better, often synonymous with continuous improvement. It's a business philosophy regarding the processes that continually improve operations ongoing, involving all employees. And Kaizen sees improvement in productivity as gradual, methodical process. But in your book, Christian, you state as an objective to learn Kaizen and apply root cause analysis for continuous improvement. What I'm really curious here is, how does this philosophy of get 1% better each day show up in support of what you're trying to create?
I think Kaizen, from the context I discuss it, has a couple purposes. And we talked about the informed realism, for instance, and some of the changes from a growth mindset. One of the things that often holds people back is they don't have the courage to start because they feel like they may fail at something. So when you embrace the philosophy of Kaizen, it gives you the courage to start because you realize you're not going to get it right the first time. You're going to, you know, fall down before you learn to walk. But as long as you're making improvement, that's what matters. And that courage is extremely important because I think that's what holds a lot of people back. And with technical people, one of the things that also holds them back is, you know, they want everything to be perfect before they start. And I believe that perfection is the enemy of execution. You know, you're not going to start something if you want it to be perfect. And lots of people want to start things their entire life, but they never do because all the planets haven't aligned properly. So with the philosophy of Kaizen, it gives you that courage to start and just make continuous improvements. Like you said, the 1% every day is a massive improvement over time. It adds up.
Christian, you just mentioned a phrase in your response that I've heard before, but I'd like you to explain a little bit more to our listeners by what you meant by this, and that is informed realism. Can you share with our listeners what that means?
Yeah, informed realism, I talk about an analogy to the Matrix, for instance, in my book, the red pill and blue pill analogy. The blue pill is when you're in the Matrix. You have that, you know, I associate that with uninformed optimism. You just kind of go through life expecting things to be different, but it's fairly comfortable. With informed realism, you take the red pill and you're willing to deal with what that really looks like because you're hungry to make the improvements. A good example of this, and I'm guilty of these, I'm not perfect with any of these things, but something that a lot of people do is avoid going to the doctor, for instance, because they don't want to find out what might be wrong with them. Find out what's wrong with you is the informed realism so you can do something about it. And this ties into Kaizen as well versus just hoping everything's going to be okay.
Great analogy. I love that. So Christian, a main point of your book is to help create technology leaders and to share insight into the world of cybersecurity. And a question your book actually discusses is, why are we losing the cybersecurity war? Why are we losing the cybersecurity war?
We're losing the cybersecurity war based on my experience because of the technical staff and specifically the cybersecurity staff, their inability to communicate effectively, their intellectual bullying, their posturing, and this idea that we need to have a subculture, which goes to that concept of significance and have our own language that nobody else understands. And if they don't understand it, you know, from an intellectual bullying perspective, we'll call them stupid. These things all tie together and they all stem from that desire to be the smartest person in the room, which is why we called the book that title. And it's hindering us in cybersecurity because there's been plenty of advances with technology, with new frameworks, with, you know, all this stuff. And it's not working. You know, just every day, there's a bigger data breach announced than the previous day. And we think, how can it possibly go bigger? And there's a bigger one announced. So something needs to be looked at from a different angle. And from my experience with my own company and being an employee and being a freelancer and being commercial and DOD, this is a common thread in the industry. And a lot of people, after they've read my book, have told me the same thing. I wasn't sure if this was just me or if this was the industry, but I've been validated by a lot of people saying this is exactly, you know, the things you write about are exactly how my organization is and we need to fix it.
Yeah, highly recommended book again, Christian. Very well written with a lot of, I would say, reflection and intellect, I would say. So thank you very much for that.
Yeah, no problem.
Christian, we've come to our last question. As fellow practitioners, part of the purpose of this podcast, in my view, is absolutely learning from our colleagues and friends, both boots on the ground as well as researchers, and allowing our listeners and the world in general to take some of those tactics and principles and apply them in real life. So from this conversation, Christian, if you had to distill your work and experience down to 3 or 4 sentences to help practitioners in ERP, IT, and organizational change in cybersecurity right now, and something to do, something to be, and something to see, what would you tell them?
I would tell them to, I guess, number one, read my book and not just read it, but integrate the concepts. A lot of us read something and understand it academically, but we don't make it part of us. And I think that's a gap that needs to be crossed. That's a concept. I also believe in working as a leader to work on yourself. I think a lot of people dismiss the concept of self-leadership or leadership from the capacity of my everyday life. But there's opportunities for leadership every single day with, you know, somebody on the bus that needs help, your family, your spouse, your partner, your friends. You don't have to have this official staff. And if you get better at leading yourself and practice this with the people around you, you're going to be a better person overall and your chances for success will increase. Another thing that I've noticed is if you're too overscheduled, which in today's life, a lot of us are very overscheduled. Our days are very filled up. If we're overscheduled, the chances of transformation for you are going to be slim because it takes time to reflect, step away from your life, get out of the busyness to actually transform. And that has to be intentional. It's not going to happen by circumstance. One other thing I'll lead you with there is a book that's really changed me, and it's a very simple book, but there's four concepts. It's called The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz.
Yep.
Those things, I try to like keep them in my mind through everyday situations. You know, be impeccable with your word. Don't take anything personally. Don't make assumptions and always do your best. It's just four simple things. But if you try to go through your life in your day-to-day with those four things in mind, I think you'll see a lot of improvements. At least it's helped me, especially with things we're talking about, like empathy. We often assume, you know, somebody is asking us questions for some reason that's totally not true, for instance. And we often take things personally, which derails the conversation. So those four things are good guiding principles that I find very valuable as well.
Thank you so much for that, Christian. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate your reflection, your intellect, you know, and as a true leader. And what I really want to know, Christian, are you going for your 25th Ironman anytime soon?
I am. I've got Ironman California coming up in 65 days or so. So yes, that'll be my 25th.
Wow. A true gentleman and a scholar. Christian, thank you so much for your time today. We are so grateful to have you on the show. We appreciate your work. I really appreciate your book. Again, very well done and with a great deal of insight. For our listeners, please check out ChristianEspinosa.com and also check out CerberusSentinel.com. Christian, thank you so much for your time. Be well, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks, Jack and Jonathan. I really appreciate the opportunity to be on here. I enjoyed the conversation.
Please join us again next week as we discuss the title of his book, Curve Benders, with Mr. David Knorr. We discuss with David how to enable leaders to reimagine the future, including conversations on David's roadmap for understanding how innovation, risk, and reward structures must be re-envisioned to spur the next level of business success. David Knorr is a leadership expert and has published 4 books, and he is a relationship economics advisor, educator, and executive coach. We hope that you will join us to catch David's full conversation.
Listeners, thank you for joining us on today's episode. We are incredibly excited and grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us on our podcast. We have an incredible lineup of guests, including ERP and organizational change speakers, authors, professors, researchers, pioneers in the field, practitioners, PE partners, business executives, ERP vendors, and organizational stakeholders. Our podcast draws on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, practitioner experience of both project successes and project failures. We hope that you find this podcast useful as we share lessons learned, discover best practices, and explore the human elements and components of ERP organizational change. We invite you to leave us feedback and a review because we want to make this the most useful and insightful podcast you listen to. And we need your help to do so.
Thank you, listeners, for being with us again this week as we seek to, one, promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community, 2, contribute to the field of ERP organizational change, and 3, bring research and practice closer together. Please join us again next week as we discuss the latest ERP organizational change research, practice, and stories. Our podcast will draw on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner expertise and experience.
From everyone here on the team, Jack, and myself, we wish you a great week, and we hope to see you again soon on another episode.
Hashtag the ERP Organizational Change Journal. Have a fantastic week.
Bye for now.